Support for WERU comes from Maine Boats, Homes, and Harbors magazine, covering Maine's boats, harbors, arts, and architecture since 1987, bringing the coast as close as the mailbox, on the web at maineboats.com.
It's 10 o'clock, and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online everywhere at weru.org. Maine Arts Alive with your host Michael Donahue is up next.
And welcome to Maine Arts Alive. I'm your host, Michael Donahue. And Maine Arts Alive is WERU's salute to the literally hundreds of outstanding artists and arts organizations around this great state. And in the continuation of that, I have some very unique and wonderful guests with me today. First of all, let me apologize for my strange voice to the listeners. End of a cold here, and hopefully will not cough at any point. But should I, that's just me. It's nothing tech. I actually am told that at one time a programmer passed away here at WERU and still came in and did his shows for a year or two. So there is no excuse that I happen to have a cold. Just kidding, of course. Just kidding. We have with us today some representatives of the Stonington Opera House. And if there is any organization and group of people that personify the arts in the state, it is this group. Not only in terms of historical preservation, but filling out a community in ways that have helped that community hold on through good times and bad. So I'm very proud to have with us Linda Nelson, who is the executive director, Cherie Mason, who is board president, and Sasha Zembruski. See, I got Zembruski right.
You think good.
I should get Sasha? who is a multi-talented a student, part of their student education program. You're an employee. What else do you do there, Sasha?
I volunteer. I have worked on stage and backstage. Pretty much whatever I need to do.
Oh, great. More people like you in the world are definitely needed. But let's set the scene. Now, Linda, can you tell me a little bit about the organization? Just a brief history of what happened to that building over time and your organization.
Sure, Michael. Thanks for having us on today. I really appreciate it.
Surely.
Thanks for all your kind words. I'm hoping that a lot of your listeners out there have heard this story before, because this will be the Opera House's 14th summer season. It's difficult to believe. Under the guise of Opera House Arts, which is the nonprofit, I was one of four people who helped to start back in 1999. At that time, the Opera House, which has a really illustrious history in Stonington, and like many of the opera houses on the coast of Maine, really, being really at the heart of their communities. The opera houses were built in the 19th and early 20th century, and they were always included town offices or stores or different parts of the community. They were always right at the central intersection in town. You can still see this in Booth Bay Harbor. You can see it in Belfast. You can see it in Camden, Waterville, all with our great opera houses. So I actually salute our fellow opera houses in the state, because we've been seeing them revive behind us as well. You know, we were a little bit early on the curve, and it's been great to see all of these wonderful historic buildings so important to Maine's cultural legacy in revival. When Opera House Arts was formed as a nonprofit in 1999, the Stonington Opera House was in deep decay. It had been abandoned for about 8 years. Prior to that, it had shown nothing but movies for many years, mostly in the summer. All of its theatrical gear had been stripped from it. There was no more lighting. There was no sound. There was no curtains. The stage was walled off. And it was the residence for actually a large family of raccoons. So we were in the unfortunate position of having to evict in order to take possession of the building.
I hear that in its history, it was used, roller skating happened in there, and you name it happened. How did they do roller skating in there?
Well, you know, one of the great things about the Opera House is that it's built as an old vaudeville house.
Yeah.
So it was built in 1912, this version of it. There's been an opera house on that property since 1886, an amusement hall. The original one, which was huge and sat 1,000 people by the time that it went down to fire in 1910, did succumb to a huge blaze in 1910. So this one was rebuilt and opened in 1912. As a vaudeville house, it has a flat floor and a high stage. So it's a 4-foot proscenium stage and a flat floor. And that flat house, instead of having raked audience seating, means that you can take those seats out and do anything there.
Yeah.
So the seats were, before they were bolted down, they always had wooden folding chairs there. And after every movie, and the movies started there in 1918, after every movie, they would fold up the folding chairs and have a dance.
Well, can't we do that today?
Well, we do that today, Michael. We've really worked hard to restore some of the historic programming to the Opera House. And one of the things we've been able to do, we have beautiful seats in there now. They're historic also. They're from the 1930s. They're traditional, what are called Roosevelt seats. They've got wooden backs and carved sides. And they were brought in by Dr. Tewksbury when he really wanted to make it into a movie palace. So he bolted them to the floor. And we have figured out a way to rig them so that we can take them out in groups and we can clear the house in about 20 minutes and have a dance or do whatever else we want there.
Okay.
We have not done roller skating again, but that was done
in
the 60s. All right.
I'm looking forward to the day you try it, however.
And you can buy a seat and have your name put on it on a brass plaque on the seat.
Cherie, you sound like you're the kind of person that does some fundraising for this.
Never miss a chance, Michael.
And those of you who are listening, if you think this name, Cherie Mason is familiar, there's a reason for that.
Tell us about my many years at ERU.
Yes. How many?
14.
14 years.
Yes, yes.
And here you are back talking about the Opera House.
Oh, with great joy.
Why?
Oh, because it's very important in my life, and I've seen the effects in our community since I first started. I actually started with the Opera House when we first moved here from the Midwest in 1982, and that subsequently became to be on ERU. I can't remember the exact date, though, that I first met Judith Jerome and Linda Nelson, but it was a fateful meeting, because I soon learned that as a professional actress, voice actress, I could work at the Opera House. They did things that I could be in. And so, actor that I am, I welcomed that. And then slowly I became encompassed with the aura of the Opera House. It's something that creeps up on you like a Maine fog. It's so pervasive, and it's wonderful because you feel it in every sense. Its importance to you, its importance to the people around you, and it just grows and grows.
And you have a unique responsibility as president of the board.
I'm not the president.
Oh, I thought you were.
I'm happily a member of the board, but not the president.
All right.
Yes, I am. It's quite an honor to be on the board. And I serve in that capacity as well as others. You know, I wash the windows. One year I was hoping someone would take a picture of me washing the windows, but we do everything. When you're a member of the Opera House, you can pop popcorn for the movies. You can show people to their seats during our live performances. You do it all.
That's a perfect segue into talking to Sasha.
Yes.
Who currently does do everything. Sasha, talk to me about the various tasks that you perform in an average day there.
Well, I usually work just on the weekends, maybe one day on the weekend, as house manager for the movies, which means that I just make sure everything's in order. I clean up, and I make sure that the volunteers we have, which do most of the work, know what they're doing. I have done... recently, I directed a short play reading from I'm an Emotional Creature. I chose a few little stories, so I've done director work, but mostly I just house manage.
And your ambition is to become an actress, professional actress, or what is your career ambition?
I'm not quite sure. I am interested in acting and or being doing something along those lines, but I'm not, nothing set in stone yet.
And you're a student at what school?
At Dear Alice Stonington High School.
Okay, and let me ask you about this. I was going to wait for a little bit to get into it, but I'm fascinated by this Kennedy Center Partners in Education program. Are you part of that?
You're not.
Okay. But Linda, what is this program? I saw it on your website. It looks absolutely fascinating. It's a partnership with the Kennedy Center of the Performing Arts to build education and the link between arts and education. Here I am saying the whole thing. Don't let me do that.
Oh, no, believe me. Yeah. I'll take off from what Sasha said and move into the Kennedy Center specifically, because I think that some of what she was saying was really important in regard to this. I mean, you know, Sasha's a junior. We wouldn't expect her yet to know what her career ambitions are, because the whole world is her oyster still, we hope. But one of the things that we truly believe, that's it's actually stated in the Opera House's mission statement, is that we use the performing arts to foster and promote excellence in all the ways we perform our lives. And that's where Insight Art Create Community comes from. And what that mission statement really means is that we see the whole Opera House philosophy is that we see every single one of us, you, Michael, Cherie, Sasha, at every part of our lives, whether we're a student or retired or an activist or a lawyer or a judge or a fisherman, as performing, that life is performance, that we perform every day. We get up out of bed, we put on our uniform, we go out, we do a performance. And by learning performance skills, whether it's through community work or through education programs like the integration program I'll talk about in a second, we really learn how to be better citizens, and we strengthen our communities through that. We learn how to be better participants. We learn how to have empathy with people of different views from ours. We learn how to speak. We learn how to have imagination and collaborate and to use our creativity to solve problems. And so to us, that's what the Opera House is all about. I know people, you know, we have a great program of movies. We have a great program of Shakespeare. But to us, it's really about that kind of lifelong learning that happens when you do these kind of things. So Sasha is getting all of that.
Yes.
Cherie gets that. I get that every day. I'm such a lucky person. I have, you know, the best job in the world. And the Kennedy Center partnership is a component of how
see.
We do that.
I see.
It's a great component of it. The Kennedy Center, John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C., national shrine to John F. Kennedy, was built in the 60s after he was assassinated. Very moving place. For any listeners out there that may not have been there yet, I urge you to go. It's a monument to the role that the arts, that President Kennedy hoped the arts would have in our lives, and that he felt like as a culture we should be remembered more for our arts than for the wars that we perpetrate around the world or that we participated in around the world. And I'm solely behind him in that. And so it's a very moving place. And since 1991, they've run what's called the Partners in Education Program, in which they encourage professional cultural organizations, such as Opera House Arts, to partner with their school districts, their local school districts, and to work toward arts integrated learning in their schools. So by arts integration, I mean learning in and through the arts. And I don't mean only the arts class that's in the art room or the music class that's in the band room. And Sasha has participated in some of this. She didn't even know it, and that's the trick of it. But bringing artists in residence into the classrooms to work with teachers and students so that the arts are a part of what they're doing in the classroom in terms of literacy, English, math, science. And more we see how that is so important to our graduates, to learning the proficiencies that our graduates need in order to succeed out in the larger world. So it's a very powerful program. We're grateful to our school district for seeing that and for partnering with the Opera House on that program. We've been members of the program since 2007, so we're in our sixth year, and it is, I think it's a pretty exciting program. I think we've had some good results as
a part of it. We have had some great graduates, Linda, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. I've often said that if everyone had to take an acting class, it would be a different world. that the process of learning acting, theater, arts, there is a statement on your webpage that I love, that arts experiences enhance critical thinking. Critical thinking abilities and outcomes. And if anything is extraordinarily important in the world today, it's critical thinking. And that connection is fascinating.
It is, and it's powerful, Michael. I was lucky enough, I just attended Arts Advocacy Day in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and attended the Nancy Hanks Lecture on Public Policy in the Arts, which is given every year at the Kennedy Center. And this year, the person to give that lecture was Yo-Yo Ma. Ah. And I urge people to Google this. They can watch the lecture online. It's about 45 minutes long, and it's incredibly moving. And he really spoke with so much articulateness about the power of the arts in this particular way, and you know, had statistics. There's been quite a bit of research done now, and one of the things we're finding is that the Fortune 500 companies, the big companies that are hiring out there, the top thing that they're looking for in graduates are their collaborative skills, their creative thinking skills, their communication skills.
Yeah.
And the types of learning that build those particular skills are the exact types of learning that happen in and through the arts. So the arts as a process for learning subject matter, okay, where as a state, we've adopted the Common Core standards. We're moving toward proficiency-based diplomas in 2018. The arts, I think, really need to be recognized as an incredibly vital way to reach these learning goals for students, and a way that engages students more in their own learning and in what it is they want to learn, so that there's some authentic learning happening.
It strikes me that there's learning going on a lot of different levels here. Sasha, for instance, how do you find your life as a high school student or as a student affected by your work there at the Opera House? Do you see any difference?
I do. I think that the arts have a big impact on how I learn, and I think that without the arts, I have heard studies about people that do band or are in the arts, they work better in school. I don't know if there is a line that I can say I've crossed by being in the arts, but I do think it enhances my school living.
Articulate answer. Thank you. Sheree, you've been involved in the arts for so long. Do you see changes in your community as a result of the presence of this organization within it?
Oh, very definitely. Definitely. In the years I've been with it now, 12 years or so, it's been astonishing how, and we're a fishing community down in Stonington.
Yes.
So it's very, people are very practical down there, and the arts are in quotes somewhat.
Yes.
But that is where the real impact has come, that people come first to the movies, that lures them. Then they get familiar with the house and how it looks. And then the next time there's our jazz festivals, of course, Paul Sullivan, whom your listeners know so well, comes down, and then they really, the ice is broken, and then they go to that and enjoy it, and they go to things, and they end up going to Shakespeare and liking it. So with that progression of participation comes an obvious expression of the importance of the Opera House to local people. You just feel it, you hear it in conversations at the grocery store, you see it in the rising attendance of our performances, and so there's a very real improvement and advancement in the effect of the Opera House. Very
so,
real.
So we shouldn't be surprised if we witness a lobsterman out there on his boat quoting Hamlet or something of that
nature. No, I guess not. Well, at least not, and he wouldn't be as ashamed to be seen there as he might have
that's
been.
That's a huge difference.
Exactly, exactly.
You mentioned films. It's been mentioned a couple of times. I hear you have a brand new projector.
We do, and that's quite a feat and a testament to our community, I have to say. For those of your listeners who may not be aware of what's happening in the film world, over the last year, 35 millimeter film, which is in fact, people don't even know it still exists, but in fact, when most of these small theaters are still showing, they've cut the distribution, they've closed plants, they've stopped making what we call prints, and they've changed the distribution so that we've been less and less able to get the kind of great top-rated movies that we've been known for all along. So we were forced, if we were going to continue to show movies in a movie theater, to convert to what's called digital cinema. And digital cinema does not mean taking a Blu-ray or a DVD and putting it into your home stereo system and watching it even on your own great home theater. I mean, people have great home theaters these days. They have their iPhones. I know people watch media in lots and lots of ways. And so sometimes the question arises, and my colleague Zoe Scott at The Grand and I have been talking about this, and she's just been writing letters about it. The question arises, you know, why a movie theater? Why come out to a movie theater to see something like this? We just raised $100,000 to invest in this system.
Mm. Significant.
It's significant, and a lot of the small theaters around the country have gone out of business instead of being able to make the conversion. It's a testament to our community who participated in that fundraising that they wanted the Opera House to continue to show movies every week. But it's not an easy road. You know, the audience for movies has been decreasing slightly, and so the continual marketing that we do, getting the word out about not just what the film is, but about what the value is to come together and to share an experience as opposed to remaining isolated in our own, you know, private media worlds and our private homes. There's a power to that that really needs to be talked about, and I think it is important for our social fabric. So we made a decision to raise the money and to do the conversion and to say that we were going to keep showing films as the Opera House has since 1918 in one form or another. And I'll tell you, the new system is incredible. If you have not experienced true digital cinema, and you may not even know if you have, you may be watching DVDs from a tiny little ceiling-mounted projector. But come on down to the Opera House and check out what this really looks and sounds like. It is fantastic.
There are a couple of things that you talked about that raise an interesting, I hope, interesting question. And that is that you are there performing for or presenting to two different communities. A winter community that's relatively small, somewhat insular, and a summer community which is worldwide. How is it that your organization has survived so well meeting these different needs, presumably different needs?
I don't think they are different needs. I think maybe that's one of the ways we've survived so well. I think that we all as humans have a need to participate in cultural experience. And we may have forgotten that in some aspects of our communities. That may be something that we just got out of habit with as the arts were cut in schools, as people didn't have the history of participation as much, as places like the Opera House closed and went into decay. And so every little town didn't have its theater anymore. But, you know, when every town did have its theater, you know, there were people acting, you know, the Lions Club. I have programs from the Opera House, like the Methodist Men's Club. there were balls, people would come dancing, people were acting, people were participating. And I think that that's the importance of having these local organizations. What we've been able to add to that is to say, right, we're going to do all of this with our community and provide all these opportunities. And in addition, we're going to work with professional actors, musicians, et cetera, that we bring from other places. We're going to create a cross-section that is inspiring to us, that can take us out of our own experience a little bit and show us an even bigger world and hopefully inspire us to think about how we continue to do what we do. So we bring those two worlds together, and we're slightly unique in doing that. Not, you know, you often have community theaters, and there are several really good ones in this area too, which are terrific. And you have a few in Maine, and of course more in places like New York, professional theaters. But you don't often see the cross-pollination that we bring to the effort. And I think that's a very important characteristic of how we serve all of our different needs in our community.
Well, the very fact that we're talking about an Opera House, which by definition is a multifaceted, I mean, roller skating and films.
Right.
I mean, how multifaceted can you get? The big difference between what an Opera House is all about, a community-oriented Opera House, and and a theater, which is certainly after its audience, but in different ways.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and it's one of the things I run into all the time. We're kind of an odd animal out. You know, we participate with the Maine Theater Collective, which has just started in Portland, and there's a group there of the producing theaters. There's actually only 7 Actors Equity theaters in the entire state of Maine.
I think there's only 7 equity actors in the state of Maine.
And there are only 4 of those that are open year-round, and the Opera House is one of those. So the others are Portland, Lewiston, Bangor. So that's pretty unusual right there. But
can I add a note about our summer supporters and fans? That has been growing, too, a great deal in the financial participation, because in the beginning, many of these summer people come from large community cities where they can get a variety of theatrical experiences. You know, they don't have to do it. But they have come to appreciate so much of what the Opera House offers in the time that they're here that they now want to get our program for the coming year. They want to know what we're going to be doing. This is an immense improvement in our covering our listeners and our attendees. Just wanted to make that point.
Well, I think that's extremely important. I mean, obviously, they have come to the fore in raising the money for the projector. But more so, they're sitting in the seats. And I think when it's all said and done, that's what you're after.
Right.
Is sitting in those seats. And the community involvement, which includes volunteers. Now, you said, Sasha, that you kind of oversee some of the volunteers. That's a big job. What kind of feedback do you get from these folks that are volunteering about the Opera House, about its role in the community, anything of that nature?
Well, we have a few volunteers that work at least once a weekend, and I think that says a lot just because they're always coming back. They get to have popcorn, which I know is a pretty big reward. But I think that the people that volunteer do it because they get to work in the Opera House, which has been helping them just get acquainted with everybody and get involved with everybody. I used to volunteer as a house manager to learn the ropes, and I just liked coming in, and I liked working and being able to help people, like, get food or watch the movie. And so I think it's just being able to go somewhere and see everybody without having to work too much to do that.
I get you. Now, are there other students from your school involved as you are? Or?
Yes. Sarah Wilson is also a house manager. There's a girl that used to go to my school. She goes to GSA now. Amy Bolton is also a house manager. So it's there's a few people that are my age that I get to do something pretty important.
Now, do you walk through the halls of your school saying, the Stonington Opera House, you have a T-shirt or something? That you
I don't. I have been wanting to get a jacket.
But I think that's a big hint.
I heard that, yeah. Yes. I definitely, I got it.
Yeah. Popcorn is okay. But, well, I think it's wonderful that you're involved on this level. It certainly is representative of a new generation getting involved in the arts, and that's great. I'm going to take a pause here while I identify the station and remind folks that this is a call-in show, and usually the last half hour or so of our show is the call-in portion. So we will open those microphones fairly shortly, not quite yet. This is WERU, Community Radio, and we are 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and streaming on the web at weru.org. And just so I can lay out some of those phone numbers so that you have them ready when we do open the phones, there's a local number, 469-0500. That's 469-0500. And there's an 800 number, and it's one of these 866 numbers. So you have to dial 1-866-625-9378. And if you happen to be on your computer, you can always do info@weru.org and ask a question that way. We have Chris sitting out front who just loves to take messages and run them back to the studio. So don't hesitate to use that as well. So we will, in about 5 minutes or so, open up the phones. What's planned for this summer? Anyone? What's planned?
Well, one of the last things that you were talking about, Michael, is how, as a vaudeville house, you know, we get to build on this delicious legacy of doing everything. and that does make us a different animal, and it really makes things a lot of fun as well. So, for example, our season will consist of a combination of professional theater, community theater, original musicals that we're working on, a jazz festival, some pop concerts, a very unique contemporary dance video installation, and workshopping two new pieces that we will premiere in 2014. So one of the other unique things about Opera House Arts is that we are a producer of original work here in Maine. That means we build it, we make it here. It's made in Maine. It's not brought in from somewhere else in a big truck or an 18-wheeler. We make the sets right here. And often we're working with the directors and the actors to create specifically new works that have not existed before. And we are working on two of those this summer, looking toward next summer for premieres of those. But we're very excited. We are premiering one of those that's been in development for a year. Some of your listeners may have caught it at the Burnt Cove Church last summer. It's called The Millay Sisters. It's based on the life of Maine poet Edna St. Vincent Millay. And it will be a cabaret, which means that we'll have all the tables set up and a bar and concessions right as part of the performance. And this is based on the history of the Millay sisters, who grew up singing together down in Camden, Maine, as well as being a terrific poet. And so there is a lot of music from the 20s and 30s accompanied by live piano. And it's a terrific cabaret performance called The Millay Sisters, and that runs from July 5th through 12th. You know, as I was talking about that, I realized we haven't told your listeners about the fact that in addition to the Stonington Opera House now, Opera House Arts operates out of another location as well. We were honored last year to have a community group, the Burnt Cove Community Church Association, come to us and say, "You've done a good job with the Opera House. Could you help us oversee the restoration of our 1870 Baptist Church and then enter into a lease agreement with us so that you would also program it?" And we were fairly ecstatic about this because we were desperately in need of additional space, both for rehearsals and for some of our smaller programs. We like to be able to show movies while we've got live shows and rehearsal and production. So we knew from our strategic planning that we were looking for additional space. So it was very fortuitous to have the Burnt Cove Church Association come to us. So last summer, we, over the course of last year, we helped to restore and oversee the renovation of that space. Beautiful, beautiful church on Airport Road in Stonington. Seats about 100 people. It's all historic tin lined. It's a very lively space. And we did program there last summer, and we will be doing so again this summer. And that's where the Millay Sisters will be held in early July.
Do you ever take any time off?
You know, and this is a conversation I have with our students quite a bit. You know, I'm one of those lucky people for whom there is not a division between my art, my work, and my life. This is what I do. You know, I don't get a huge compensation for it. It's what I do every day, but it's very meaningful. It's very creative. And it's my life, and it's what I do.
I got you. Okay, let's open these phones. All of you who have been sitting by your phone ready to dial, here's what you dial, 469-0500 or an 866 number, long distance, 625-9378. So feel free. Linda, while you were talking, you mentioned a digital presentation of something. That sounds kind of, well, it all sounds fascinating, but that sounds unique. What is that?
It is unique. It's a dance company from New York called Bridgman Packer. And this is a commission that Portland Ovations down in Portland was one of the co-commissioning organizations on. And we are the tail end of a New England tour sponsored by the New England Foundation for the Arts. And after Bridgman Packer is at the fantastic and legendary Bates Dance Festival in Lewiston, they'll be coming to us with this show called Voyeur. Voyeur is based on the work of artist Edward Hopper, much beloved to New Englanders and New Yorkers alike for his very stark and existential paintings and drawings.
Yes.
So what we will do for this is transform the Opera House. We will take all the seats out of the Opera House, put in an installation, which is the set, and video projectors, and Art Bridgman and Myrna Packer, who are the dancers. I've never seen any video dance like this before. Their overlay of video on their live bodies while they perform amidst this set is some of the most magical transformative work we've seen. They are Guggenheim Fellows. They're quite amazing. And the audience will be seated on the stage watching this happen in the hall of the Opera House. Mm-hmm. So for a really unique participatory theater experience, this is the one to come to. It is in August. It's from August 13th through the 18th, and seating will be very limited. We'll only be able to seat about 60 people per show for that. All of these tickets are online already at our website, as is our full schedule. So that's at operahousearts.org.
How many performances of that?
We're going to begin with a lecture demo on Tuesday, the 13th of August, so that people can come and kind of hear and understand what the work is. So, and then it will run for four full performances, and they'll be presenting another work along with Voyeur. It's a terrific time to see some really original contemporary dance.
Let me give out these phone numbers again and encourage folks to call in. 469-0500 and 866-625-9378. Sasha, I continue to come back to you because I think what you represent something awfully wonderful about the arts and theater, and that is a young lady who's finding that their life has changed as a result of being, or at least being, your life being influenced by the arts. How did this all come about? How did you get interested in the place to begin with?
I think I remember when I was just a little girl, I got to be in a play reading The Girl with the Blue Chair, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the first time I was actually on stage at the Opera House. And from there, it's just been, I've gotten to see movies at the Opera House, I've gotten to see plays, and it's always been in my life. It's never been something that I had to, my parents helped me get there, and so it's just been easy to get to. It's been something that I can get popcorn.
You keep mentioning that popcorn.
Popcorn's very good.
But mention the coat again that you want. Isn't there a jacket that you should mention that again?
The jacket.
Yeah.
It's black.
Uh-huh.
And there's no hood, but it's very nice looking.
So your parents have been supportive.
Yes, they are very supportive of my interest in the theater and the arts.
Now, we have a little age separation between
Perfect.
Sasha and Sherry.
She's the beginning, I'm the end.
Well, speak about that middle.
All right.
What got you involved in theater and in acting and in this particular organization and progressing to your role as a member of the board?
Oh, my. How much time do we have, Michael?
Well, can you do it in 20 minutes?
In 20 seconds. How about that? Well, I don't know. My acting career came out of, I was a graduate of Northwestern University and wanted to go into theater and couldn't for financial reasons, so I went into advertising.
Uh-huh.
And when I had spent my career there, I decided that I then could indulge what I really wanted to do, which is acting. So I did that professionally for 12 years in Chicago and New York, a voice actress mostly. Uh-huh. And then when we moved to Deer Isle, after we'd had a catastrophic fire in the Midwest, and we had to regroup, I discovered the Opera House. And it provided an opportunity for me to do what I love the most, which is to perform and to write and direct and do all of the things in the theater. And so one thing led to another, and they kept inviting me back and expanding my role at the Opera House. And finally, I became so involved in every way that I ended up on the board, which was a tremendous honor, and I serve in that capacity now. But I also do all kinds of volunteer chores, and we're all part of a family.
This is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, right. And thus requires a board. But over and above being required, what activities are the board involved with there in support of the organization?
Well, all of the programming, we hear about it and give a nod to it, and many of the ideas for our programming come from board members. We encourage anyone who is involved with the Opera House, or even if they're not, to give suggestions for programming. I would say that the well-being of the organization is the responsibility of the board financially, to be sure that we're solvent, that we are not operating over our budget. Those are all serious considerations. And while we want to do exciting new things, as Linda has described so ably, some of them are not possible because we must raise the money for this. So fundraising is a constant requirement of all board members, of all nonprofit boards. So that's one thing we do.
The role of support, especially as the organization starts to expand, is going to be increasingly important. How the necessity to expand and grow and the desire to expand and grow against the financial responsibility you have, Linda, for this organization, how do you meet those two?
Through really careful planning and really careful listening to our community. You know, the Opera House only needs to be as big as the community that it serves. And we've been delighted to find that there is an expanding hunger and desire for our programs. And so we respond to those, to that demand for workshops, for Shakespeare, for more concerts, and try to grow in those ways. And when we do that, we've been very blessed to have selected and had willing to serve people like Cherie, our board chair, Rich Howe, our vice chair, Marianne Tynan, our former board chair, the wonderful Lael Stiegel. They have really been the people who have grown the organization. Judith and I, as co-founders and directors, we live in the service of the building and of the community and of the programming, but it's the board who really makes sure that this is sustainable for the long term. And I think you mentioned when we came into the studio today, Michael, that it's quite amazing to have us going into our 14th season, to go from nothing, from a decaying building, to an institution with an over $700,000 a year budget and a staff of 7 people year round and more than that in the summertime. And that is creating jobs in downtown Stonington. Every dollar that goes into that Opera House generates other dollars in that community, so that we generate more than $1 million of economic activity every year in that community, keeping the lights on Main Street year round so people are always coming down there for some reason. So it has a lot of a ripple effect out into our community as we have grown and as our board has made sure that we're sustainable for the long term and beyond the lives of any of us as individual founders, so that we have a good staff.
So what was it you say, 14 years ago when you first saw that theater and you were standing there on the street in Stonington and you were looking up at this decaying building? And what in the world made you say, I want to take that on and do that?
I love that question. People ask us that all the time because they essentially think that we were a little bit crazy. And I think that that's true. I think we're crazy in the best senses of having a vision and then being able to take the risk to go for our vision. And I hope that through our role modeling for people like Sasha and all of her peers that we've had before and after her, that they will someday in their future be able to take that same leap of vision that Judith and I and our two other partners, Linda and Carol, took when we saw that building. You know, sometimes something just grabs your heart, Michael. And I will say honestly that I am in love with that community. I'm in love with that building. I'm in love with the arts. And was lucky enough to have the partners and the skill and the community support to make that vision a reality. But yeah, fell in love with the building, just like head over heels, boom, yeah. Boom, boom, like a love story.
And the raccoons.
You can make a love story of it.
That's right. This word vision, so important to any entrepreneurial project, but more so, the ability to extend that concept of vision to the community as a whole so that they could grasp that what visioning means. It means looking to the future. it seems to me the arts has a very special role in developing that ability to look into the future.
Because it's about both imagination and empathy, which are skills you need to learn as an actor or as any kind of performing artist, to understand how, you know, you can say to kids, well, use your imagination, but what does that mean? You know, there are actually skills that you can learn to how you can see what's going on inside you and how you can understand those visions and how you can articulate them and how, as part of that, we really listen to other people and have empathy for their different situations. So I think that learning in and through the arts really gives us some of those skills that we often think come a priori, but in fact are learned skills, and maybe we need to focus on them a little more in our various communities because they're important for us to have.
Sasha, you represent an age, a generation in which you know, there's the iPhones and all of the materials for communication, which tend to be very insular. How has this experience with the Opera House changed how you communicate with others, how the type of visioning that you do as a looking to your future?
Well, I have been getting the opportunity, like I said, I got to direct, and so sometimes I get to see my peers as actors with me on stage, as actors I got to direct, and so it's just, I get to see them evolve through the arts with me, and sometimes it's a little more difficult prodding along some students to enjoy the arts, because sometimes it's just not their thing.
Yeah.
But when you see, if there's Shakespeare on stage, it's just really interesting to see the kids around me are clapping, they're laughing along, and from where I saw it a few years ago even, it's changed so much that there are more students enjoying what they're seeing, which I think is pretty magical.
Tell us about that directing experience. What was that like?
Well, I got to, there were four students, Asia Eaton, Allison Cormier, Sarah Wilson, and Nicole Nolan. They range from senior to freshman. And they're, most of them are my friends, so it wasn't very adventurous, but it was still something different.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, I did I'm an Emotional Creature, and I chose a few, which is a book filled with little monologues. And so I chose a few of those, and I let the girls choose which ones they felt connected to and or which ones they liked to read. They chose one or two of those, and then two girls actually wrote their own little stories. So I gave them that opportunity. But I think not all of them had many opportunities to act or do little monologues, which I thought was a good thing for them. And I think that they enjoyed being able to show themselves through something that wasn't necessarily their own.
If you were to take it down to maybe one or two things that you learned in the process of moving from actress to director, what would you say leaps to mind?
Leaps to mind. Probably just being able to noticing the difference between what you're saying and what you might be doing and how it just affects the people.
Sounds like you're learning quite a bit in the process of this program. Linda, is there anything else that's coming up this summer that you want us to know about in specific?
Well, I'm going to put in a quick plug here for community visioning, Michael, taking off from the last part of the conversation we were having. In fact, Stonington and many of the small towns around us have planning to do as things change and as the needs and demands on our communities change. And Stonington tonight is taking a very proactive step on that. Residents are welcome to join us in a forum on the second floor of the town hall at 7 p.m. to really think about the future of downtown Stonington. That will be facilitated by WERU's own Ron Beard, who does his own show here, as well as being part of the Maine Cooperative Extension. And I think it's a great chance for people to come together and think about what do we want our town to look like in the next 10 years. You know, what are some of the challenges that we face in getting there? You know, is parking a challenge in the summer? Sure it is. So how do you deal with those kinds of issues? And I just really encourage participation in some of these public forums. That's how you really get your voice heard. And it is really about the future of Stonington, which the Opera House sitting there on that corner has been and continues to be, we hope, a big part of. So other stuff this summer. Paul Sullivan, as Cherie said, is coming back. We're very lucky to collaborate with Paul. We've worked with him to create his own program called P.S. I Love Music. It's somewhat in the vein of Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, on which many of your listeners have heard on public radio. Paul, who's a great storyteller as well as a wonderful pianist and composer, brings his musician friends onto the stage with him and conducts interviews and has conversation with them. As Paul says, he gives us a little sense of what's happening in the green room between musicians. And then we also get to hear their incredible music as well. So one of the guests this summer will be Maine Public Radio's Suzanne Nance.
Oh, yes.
Who is a terrific singer as well as a wonderful music
director
and
host. Becoming quite the performer, yes.
Well, I think she was quite the performer.
Well, that's true. That's true.
And just a very kind and generous person. She, in fact, is going to do a vocal masterclass for Island residents the Friday before the show. So the show is Saturday, June 22nd. And on Friday, June 21st, community members will have a chance to take a vocal masterclass with Suzanne, which I think is very, very exciting. So that's one of the other things coming up. Our jazz festival remains unique in the state. It will be the 13th season of that. And this year we're featuring a Cuban performer, Yosfany Terry, one of the really up-and-coming links to the Cuban tradition, and we have not touched that area of jazz before, so we're very excited about that. And we do that in collaboration with Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, where Yosfany will be in residence for a two-week session around our jazz festival. So he will be in the community for quite a while, and residents will have a chance to hear him speak at Haystack and visit him in his visiting musician studio there, as well as hear him at the festival. And we're grateful to Haystack for that collaboration. The other performer at this year's Jazz Festival is the Grammy-winning pianist Fred Hirsch. And Fred has a really unique project that really touches on issues of healthcare that he's touring and that we'll be talking about as part of the festival. It's called My Coma Dreams. Fred is HIV positive and has been for many, many years. And due to some infections that go along with being HIV positive, was put into a medically induced coma for 2 months several years ago. And he has created a jazz theater piece called My Coma Dreams, which really speaks to the issues that we all face around healthcare, around communications with our partners, around the visions that we may have in these kind of altered states when we're ill and when we're being treated medically. And I think that Fred's concert with us and a little film of this jazz theater piece and the talk that we will have with him will be an amazing experience to have this summer.
How do people get in touch with you? How do people buy tickets?
Okay, well, we've got a Facebook page. We've got Twitter. Just always look for Opera House Arts, okay? It's not the Stonington Opera House. It's Opera House Arts. And our website is operahousearts.org. And you can buy tickets online there at any time, see the full schedule. You can go to our YouTube channel, see video feeds of some of our past performances, and really learn a lot of the background. We've got a blog there and all kinds of ways for you to participate. Give us your ideas. Add your voice to the whole wonderful wild mix that you're hearing here today. That is what happens down at the Stonington Opera House.
And Shakespeare this year is
Cymbeline.
Cymbeline
this year.
Yes. Unique. This is unique.
Now that would be interesting to watch that fisherman quote from that. Absolutely. Sasha, if there are any folks out there your age, high school students, who might be interested, what would you say to them if they are interested in participating in some way with this organization?
I would say do it. I think that it's it's so great, and I know some people feel like they might be made fun of or they won't enjoy it, but there's just so many opportunities and there's so many different things they can get involved with that they should definitely try it.
When you're walking down the hallway at school and people know about your involvement in the Opera House and so on, what kind of reactions do you get? Are people interested? Do they ask you about it? The whole idea of linking to the arts? What do they talk to you about this, if anything?
They don't really talk to me about it. The people that are interested at this point have gotten involved, so there have been a few students that want to be involved, but it's so easy for them. They don't really talk to me about it.
So how do they get involved? They contact Linda?
They can contact Linda. They can contact me.
Okay.
They want to, yeah.
And I want to put a plug in here for Sasha's show, because it does have another life in addition to the Opera House. She is doing the show she directed with the students, I Am an Emotional Creature, at the George Stevens Academy Arts Festival at the end of May. So the 28th, 29th, or 31st of May, there will be a chance to see Sasha's work there at George Stevens, and we're really proud of the work she did with that show.
So this is coming up. Are you nervous?
Well, I've already done it on stage, so I can't be more nervous.
Okay, that's great. Sherry, we talked briefly about your 14 years experience with WERU. Do you remember that in terms of ever wanting to come back and be on air again?
Yes, of course. Of course, I miss it. I miss that forum. It would be wonderful to come back, but no longer could I handle the amount of material I would need to do a half-hour program, because it's enormous. At the time, I had some help to do it, but it takes a great deal of material to put in a half-hour. But I would love it. I'd love it to do it tomorrow.
You were talking about some of the groundbreaking work you did in environmental and so on in your early years.
Well,
your show?
Well, I think so. I think the show was very helpful in getting people to feel that they could do something about the environment and about our elected officials.
What was the title?
A Wildlife Journal was okay. The last title.
Okay.
An environmental notebook is how it began. But I remember one show where I invited listeners to call me, and we would tape the show, I said, and we would send all of the tapes of all of the call-ins to the White House. And so this was your chance to talk to the president. And it was a very successful show.
What did the president say?
We never got a response.
Which president was
never,
this?
Never. Well.
Can we say? Or?
Yeah, I think it was Reagan.
Ah.
I think it was Reagan. I can't remember now, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's very
interesting. But it shouldn't have come from the president. It should have come from his office of public affairs
should have come from the president.
Absolutely.
My goodness, the
well,
least
right.
he can do. I want to thank you all for a fascinating hour. I said when we began that this organization, I think, is just stands tall in terms of theater and the arts in the state of Maine. A lot of people look to your success and try and emulate it as best they can, but you have achieved it. And I certainly wish you continued success in that. And Sherry, thank you for being with us today and representing the board and the organization.
Thank you.
14 years at WERU and an actress. It's a wonderful career that you have
it
had.
It is. I've
and
been very lucky.
Sasha, thank you for being with us. Your voice from a generation coming along is inspiring, and I thank you. And you're very articulate, by the way.
Thank you.
And you deserve that jacket.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. You do.
And Linda, as always, thank you for your, well, for your leadership and for your...
Yes,
for
I'd
your
like to role. Say that as a board member, that yeah. Linda and Judith deserve much acclaim for what they have accomplished in these past years.
All right, for Maine Arts Alive, good day, and thank you all again. Thank you.